Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast, and today I have the pleasure of bringing to you a guest who is a huge expert in the area of professional speaking, public speaking, making presentations of all kinds to audiences that are as diverse as corporate people, attorneys, educators. A variety of people can be in your audience. For us, as legal nurse consultants, our focus is talking primarily to attorneys, paralegals, associates in law firms. Those are the people that we typically speak to. Stephanie is the founder and director of Professionally Speaking Consulting, LLC, which is a communications agency dedicated to preparing people to speak at high-stakes events. Those events include product launches, analyst meetings, trade shows, and testifying before Congress. Stephanie, Scotty, and I have been connected for probably at least 9 or 10 years through our involvement with the National Speakers Association, where Stephanie and I first met. And Stephanie and I were part of the mastermind that I ran for several years, in which we focused on how to build our speaking businesses. Stephanie, I'm so glad that we have a chance to bring you back to Legal Nurse Podcast for the second time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat. It's really a pleasure to talk with you and to talk with your audience. So thank you for the invitation.
Thank you. I just recently read Stephanie's book, Talk on Water, Attaining the Mindset for Powerhouse Presentations. I had an opportunity to give a talk in Las Vegas a couple weekends ago to the National Nurses and Business Association. And I was intrigued by her book and found it to be extremely helpful for me in terms of preparing. Let's talk about that book for a moment, Stephanie. Talk on Water is an unusual title. Where does that come from?
Pat, you know what? It comes from my 10th grade experience in a public speaking class in Hampton, Virginia, with my teacher named Mrs. Griffith. And I grew up in the Army, just to give a quick backstory here, and never had a chance to perform. We moved from every 9 months to every 3 years. In fact, in the sixth grade, I went to 3 different schools. So we were always on the go. And because of that, I never took art classes or dance classes or music classes, and therefore never really had a chance to perform or to be on stage. And I took Mrs. Griffith's public speaking class, and I can remember so clearly, it was in October that I did this, they gave this particular talk. It was a 3-minute talk on being patriotic. And I stood up and I gave it, and about a minute into it, I noticed that people were kind of leaning forward in their chairs. And I realized they're listening to me. I was kind of amazed. I mean, I was just doing what Mrs. Griffith told us to do, you know, in terms of how we organize our talk or how we deliver it in the platform skills with eye contact and gestures. And I didn't expect this kind of a reaction. And then when I finished, all of a sudden, there was a round of applause. And I was quite taken back because it was the first time it happened in the class. But what really connected for me was the fact that they were listening. And I felt this connection with my audience. I felt this connection with my message. I just felt like in that moment, I could do anything. I could actually, perhaps, talk on water. So that's where the title came from.
That is wonderful, Stephanie.
I realized perhaps I could really talk on water.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like that moment changed your life. It showed you the potential for reaching people with your speaking skills.
It absolutely changed my life. It became the pivot point for my career. And I actually started at the age of 16 coaching my peers as they got prepared for what was then called forensics competition, when they would be on the road giving talks and competing against other high schools. So I actually started my coaching career back in high school, all because of that 3-minute talk in Mrs. Griffith's speech class.
Well, let's talk about the mindset that goes along with what you discovered in that moment when you were 16 years old?
I think the biggest thing I discovered was the whole point of connection. And that a lot of times when people step up to speak, they really don't, they think about the content, they focus on the content, but they really don't focus on the connection that needs to happen to be successful. And what I realized in Mrs. Griffith's class, and as I matured and grew into my career, that it's really three kinds of connection that take place. It's really the connection with yourself. You know, the idea of, do I understand what I need to talk about? Do I believe in what I want to talk about? And connecting with that whole sense of being your best self and being willing to share who you are with your audience. The second part is connecting with your message. And that is that what you say you believe in, it has integrity for you and you're able to share it with others. And then when you take that time to connect with yourself and you believe in your message, then once you stand up, it's all about giving a gift to your audience. You're helping them to understand a message that's pertinent to them. So then that allows you to connect with your audience. So it's connecting with yourself, connecting with your message, connecting with your audience are critical to be to talking on water.
I think a basic question that I need to ask you is dealing with the fear of public speaking. Mm-hmm. To get to where you just shared those three pieces, you have mm-hmm. to overcome your fear of getting up in front of a group of people. Mm-hmm. My husband, a couple of years ago, had an opportunity to say a few words at the 70th birthday of one of his college friends. And despite the fact that I'm a professional speaker, that has not rubbed off on him at all. He was terrified. He was shaking. His voice was quavering. I knew that he wanted to be anywhere else on the planet other than standing there with a microphone in front of him. Could you comment a little bit about, for our listeners who are anxious about the idea of standing in front of a group of people, how to deal with that fear?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it comes down to actually two categories. One is your mindset, and the other one is some practical things you can do for yourself. Would you like me to start with mindset, Pat, a little bit and talk about that?
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. There's a couple of things that I find people consistently are amazed at when they hear this. And I think the first one that tends to resonate with people the most is that it is about connection. It's not about perfection. That when you stand up to speak and to share either from your heart, which is probably what your husband was doing, or share more business, having a more business message, people aren't looking for you to be absolutely perfect. They're not there to criticize you. They're actually there to absorb and appreciate what you're saying. So when people start to realize they don't have to be perfect, there isn't a formula or a template they need to plug into. But they do need to recognize that their message is important and connecting with their audience is important. Then they start to loosen up a little bit more because they don't feel like there's this judge out there. The second thing that I think is really helpful for people to recognize, and what I'm told over and over again, is to realize that your audience is in fact your biggest fan. And they're kind of selfish, you know. One of the reasons why they're your biggest fan is because they want to feel like they spend their time well and sitting there listening to you, to being in your audience. But they're really not there to criticize you. In fact, they want you to do well. And in some analogies that people may be able to identify with is if you go to a comedy club. You know, so many of us have been to comedy clubs or watched comedians on television, perhaps, or some kind of performance. And their joke isn't landing just the way they hoped it would. And you're kind of cringing and you're thinking, go on to the next one. We'll get the next one. Right. So you're still kind of rooting for them and wanting them to recover. And that's what your audience is doing for you. They are rooting for you. And if something happens, they really want you to recover. So keep forging ahead, you know, keep a bold face and march forward. And those are two of the biggest things with mindset. And just let me add one more, if I may. And that is to realize that a presentation is really an enlarged conversation. And if you can take that conversational approach, and many times think about it just like if you're sitting down with a friend and talking. Yes, there are some platform skills. Yes, there's some formality to it. But in terms of your mind, if you think about it as sharing with a colleague or somebody you care about and cares about you, that helps shift your thinking some. So those are some mindset things to keep in mind. But there's some real practical things that can help you get over that nervousness. And first of all, to recognize that nervousness is absolutely normal. I don't know about you, Pat, but my stomach still kind of quivers when I'm about to talk. And I calm my own nerves down a little bit. That's just the adrenaline that's rushing through your body to help you prepare for what you're supposed to do or what you're about to do. But there are some concrete things you can do to help yourself. And for me, the biggest one is that before I step up to speak, I need to say it out loud. And that doesn't mean I need a conference room or I necessarily need to be in the venue where I'm speaking. That can just start with me sitting at my desk and what I call a table read and just simply saying it out loud. So many people think that once they get it down on paper or into a PowerPoint slide, that they're done. And you're maybe 70% done at best. Because I can pretty much promise you, when you say it out loud, you're still going to be tweaking. And that it's only when you say it out loud that one, you find out how long it's going to be. And number two, you hear if it makes sense. And number three, you find out what trips you up and what works. So one of the primary things people can do is just say it out loud. And people tend to not want to reserve time to do that. But you know what? You can do it while you're doing a chore, you know, while you're doing the dishes or mowing the lawn or whatever. The idea is that it's coming out of your mouth and you're hearing what you're saying. And the other thing, which you and I were just talking about prior to the podcast, is really getting to that area, that room where you're going to be speaking ahead of time. And it can be the conference room down the hall, or maybe it's a totally new venue. In your case, it was in Las Vegas. But get there ahead of time and do what I call make friends with the room. You know, kind of walk around that room and get to know it. So that I actually think about transforming it into my favorite room in my house. People come in that room, you're no longer on unknown territory. They are now your guests in your home. And you have control over that room. So getting there early, making friends with the room, making sure things are set up the way that they're going to work for you will really help set that tone and boost your confidence. Will it get over those shaky knees or those sweaty palms? Maybe not, but it will give you the logistics you need to know you can succeed.
And as I shared with you, Stephanie, when I got to that room in Las Vegas a couple weekends ago, I realized that my projector and my computer were not compatible with each other. If I had walked into that room 5 minutes before I was supposed to start and discovered that, I would have had to rethink how I was going to do that presentation without my slides. So making friends with the room can also avert the disasters that can befall you because of technology.
Absolutely. And you know, that's so true, Pat. And to add on to that, which did not happen to you, which I'm so glad, is sometimes I've been in situations that it all worked and the speaker gets up to speak and the technology fails.
Ugh, horrible.
So, you know, you've got to be able to pivot. Mm-hmm. And as a speaker, you're also a leader. You've got to be able to pivot and keep everybody else confident and what's about to happen. So getting to that room early really helps you come up with a plan B if you need to. And in your case, you were able to come up with a plan B, which meant going to get some adapters and putting other things in place.
Yes, and I had a plan C, which was that I brought with me both my script and a printout of my slides, 6 per page. So if necessary, I could have looked at my pieces of paper with my printed slides on them and gone off of those sheets of paper, although the audience wouldn't have been able to see the slides in that case.
Yes.
But that was the backup plan.
Yes, and redundancy. That kind of redundancy is so important. I think people don't necessarily think about taking it to that extent. I was actually working on a conference, preparing speakers for a conference in San Francisco several years back, and it was a huge conference. Tens of thousands of people in attendance. And what happened is it put such a drain on the internet system that people who had videos or were counting on being able to access the cloud for their presentation weren't able to. Mm. And they didn't think ahead. They didn't bring hotspots or something to give them access. Mm-hmm. They had to totally rethink their talk in the moment.
That's so, pressure. Cool.
Yeah, thinking about those pieces is very important.
You know, I saw that happen in Denver at the National Speakers Association this summer with one of the people who had a slide presentation, which was on Google Drive, and he needed internet access to show his slides. And there was no internet access in that basement of that building. One of the people in the audience volunteered to let him use his phone as a hotspot.
Yep.
And it was really an awkward beginning. The guy had great content, but it took, you know, several moments of thinking and problem solving to come up with a solution, which fortunately somebody in the audience came to. But we were all staring at him, waiting for him to begin. And he was literally sweating as he realized he couldn't rely on being able to use the internet in order to show his slides. He looked at us and said, well, this is a lesson to be learned for the future.
Yes. Yeah, I actually do three things. I still put my slides on a jump drive so that I can always access them that way if I need to. I email them to myself, as well as have them in my Dropbox folder or wherever I'm storing it in the cloud. And sometimes I even, if there's an option, I'll even email it to the client so they'll have a copy.
Mm.
So I think redundancy is critically important because when you step up to speak, you want to be able to be present to your audience. And if you're worried about your logistics, that actually separates or you know, creates some separation between you and your audience and takes up valuable time.
Yes. Yes. And people start drifting away, start checking their phones, start talking to each other. It's very awkward.
And it can actually hurt your credibility. So all of a sudden you have to regain that credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Before we continue, please listen up. This is what I suspect is true for you. You want to present your expertise so effectively that attorneys will line up to speak to you after you give a presentation. You know there's a lot to master in order to effectively give a talk. You need to feel prepared and confident when you stand in front of your attorney audience. How can you stand up in front of attorneys feeling confident and prepared? How can you eliminate that nagging worry that you've overlooked an important detail? I have a brand new free checklist to share with you. It's called Presentation to Attorneys Checklist. It will take you through the before, during, and after phases of giving a talk to attorneys so that you are ready to make the most of this opportunity to share your knowledge and gain clients. Request this checklist at the show notes for this podcast on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. That link again is podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. And you're going to head to podcast number 368 or 369. Now, let's return to the show.
Well, you've mentioned about connecting with your audience. What are some simple ways that you can be yourself and also connect with them and draw them in as you're beginning your talk?
Mm-hmm. The very first thing is even before you begin your talk for me. And that is if there's an opportunity, and I recognize that different circumstances, it may not be an opportunity, but if it is an opportunity, I'd like to greet people as they come in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I like to shake their hand. I like to say hello, ask them why they're there, ask them if anything in particular is on their mind, because that gives me really good input that I can even make impromptu or extemporaneous comments within my talk.
Yes.
So it's relevant to them. But more importantly for me in terms of working off any nervous energy, if I reach out and I touch somebody and I shake their hand, I already have a connection. You know, I'm looking them in the eye, I'm shaking their hand. And so when I get up there, I've already started to build that bridge between that individual or between that audience and myself in front of the room.
Mm-hmm.
So go around and meet and greet people. You don't have to have any in-depth conversation, but it lets them know you're a human being and allows them to connect with you in some way, as well as you with them. So that's number one. Number two is, it's really interesting that how the importance of eye contact and a smile. And I think we take that for granted. I think we take it for granted, but it's so critical that when you're up in the room, before you speak, just to take a moment and greet people with your eyes and with a smile. And I'm talking about a sincere smile. You're not a fake smile, but a really sincere smile. So that it's almost like when you invite people into your home, or you answer the door and people come into your home and you greet them. And first it's a nonverbal greeting, and you're looking at them and you're smiling, and then you might hug them or say hello or invite them in. That's what you're doing in front of the room. So people are locking in on you at that point, and they're deciding whether or not to listen to you. And you're inviting them to listen to you by your nonverbal. So that's another nice way to make a connection. Two other things, though, that are really critical that I don't think a lot of people know about is, if you want engagement, if you want people to raise their hand, or even more importantly, to say a few words, or if you're asking them to turn to your neighbor, to their neighbor, to have a conversation, it's vitally important that whenever you want any kind of participation, even Q&A, that when you invite it, you have to have eye contact with your audience. If you drop your eyes for even a nanosecond, they will doubt the invitation. So if you think about, you know, if you think about when you're in school, elementary school or high school, maybe even college, and your teacher, especially high school, I remember this, the teacher would ask a question and just look out at you expectantly, like, somebody's going to talk here. I'm just going to wait until they do. That's kind of the look you're giving. You're looking out with this pleasant expression saying, okay, we're going to engage now. And they do, they will. So having that eye contact is really important. And the second one is, if you want to call on somebody in particular, so Pat, if you were in my audience and I realized you had a piece of content or something to contribute, even though you hadn't raised your hand or indicated that you wanted to speak, I might look over at you. You look at me, so we kind of lock in with our eye contact. And then I say, Pat, okay, now you know I'm about to call on you. And then I direct my question or comment to you. Now that's really important, because if I look at you and I say, Pat, and you look back at me like, don't you dare, Stephanie, then I can back up and help you say face. But if you look at me like, yes, I've already got your attention. And now when I ask you a question or direct a comment to you, you're more likely to listen and understand what I'm saying. So instead of saying, Pat, what about A, B, and C? If I say, what about A, B, and C, Pat? You see the difference? So two ways to help ensure engagement.
You also shared a tip in the book that I was reading on the plane before I did my presentation that I found invaluable. When people were raising their hands to respond, I would say, yes, the lady in the blue jacket, and then we'll go to the woman in the white blouse, so that they would know that I was specifically acknowledging them, as opposed to sometimes when you raise your hand and the speaker points at you, but you're not sure if they're pointing at you or the person behind you.
Yeah.
So it was very valuable to identify people by their clothing.
Yeah, that's actually, that technique is called a batting order.
Uh-huh.
And it accomplishes a couple of things. It does exactly what you described. It lets people know who you're calling on. It also lets them know the order that you're calling on them. So you gave an example of two people, and sometimes I'll add on a third. The beauty of that, Pat, is if you forget whose hand was raised, you could say, now, who was second? And the whole audience will say, oh, it's the person in the white blouse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your audience is now on your side because they know how this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great tool.
Give us a piece of advice that you found that seems to resonate with most people who have the opportunity to do some speaking.
You know, the one that people really say thank you for is one that I've already mentioned, and that is that it's about connection, not perfection.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that people just come back and repeat and say thank you, because I think it takes some pressure off of them. and they realize that they can just be who they are. And that helps them to actually step up their game. So I think that's the one that tends to resonate with people the most. The other one that people tend to appreciate is the whole idea of transforming the room, because it gives them control. They feel like they can now be in control in a good way, so that they can then connect and relate to their audience.
I'm sure you've heard that expression. There's three talks that you give: the one you plan to give, the one that you actually gave, and maybe followed by the one that you wish you had given.
Yes.
I've talked to people who have and trained people to be expert witnesses. When you go in the courtroom, the way that you deliver your material to the jury can have a profound impact on the outcome of the case. And if you answer the questions to your satisfaction about 90% of them, that's a really good testimony. But you'll always come away from a situation, at least in the courtroom, thinking, oh, I should have answered that question differently. And you can torture yourself, quite honestly, if you're a perfectionist, when you're delivering your opinions in the courtroom or when you are giving a talk to attorneys, always thinking, oh, it wasn't quite good enough, or I should have delivered it differently. So I think focusing in on the fact that perfection may be unattainable is a way to make you feel good about what you've done.
I think so. And also, Pat, may I relate that back to a Q&A session for just a minute and offer mm-hmm. another tip? Because you brought something to my attention. That can happen in a Q&A session. That's a totally different kind of high stakes event, because in a courtroom, it's so high stakes. But business leaders, when they're speaking and handling a question and answer session, sometimes can be very tempted to say, did I answer your question? In an attempt to want to get it just right. Sometimes that's not a good strategy for several reasons. If it's a hostile audience, you do not want to ask that question. If it's somebody who likes to hear their own voice, who's asking the question, you don't want to give them the liberty to do that. And it also can stop you from moving on to someone else who has a different question. So I very much discourage speakers from saying, did I answer your question? I think you need to listen to it. If you don't quite understand the question, or if it's complex, or if you want to make sure you answer it adequately, you can always do what I call a listening check. That is, repeat the question back to the person to make sure you understood it the way they meant it before you answered it. And then once you answer it, you move on. Because the idea is, during a Q&A, is you want as many people's ideas or questions to be heard as possible in the time allotted. So you really can't question yourself, did I answer it just right? Would I count on, under those circumstances, if I didn't answer it just right, they will ask me a follow-up question.
True. Yeah, that's a great point. Tell our listeners how they can get a copy of Talk on Water and stay connected with you.
I would love to. Thank you, Pat. That's very generous. Talk on Water is on Amazon. So you can go on Amazon and get a copy of it, either Kindle version or it's a hardback right now. And if you go into any brick and mortar bookstore, they can also get Talk on Water as well for you. They can order that. And the other thing you can do is, if you'd like to just reach out to me, my website is professionallyspeaking.net. So you can learn more about what I do and the services we provide on the website, professionallyspeaking.net.
And I can testify to the fact that Stephanie has great material to share from having prepped many people for high stakes presentations. Stephanie, so wonderful to have you on the show sharing your tips. I know our listeners would want to hear even more, but we limit these podcasts to 30 minutes, but I know you've got enough to share with us. We could go on for hours.
Well, thank you, Pat. It has been just so much fun talking with you and sharing this with your audience. So I appreciate the invitation again.
And for you, our listener, I hope what you've gotten from this program is some useful information that you can use when you're making presentations to attorneys, if you're testifying in the courtroom. What I'm taking away from this is the importance of being happy with your performance and recognizing that it will never be perfect. There may be moments when you are on a high and you're rolling with the moment and everything is coming together, and that's a wonderful thing. But your audience is sitting there when you are fumbling, wanting you to be successful. So it's important for me to keep that in mind when I'm feeling anxious about doing a presentation, or how is it going, or am I meeting the needs of the audience, to know that you've got knowledge that's important for your audience to hear, and they want you to succeed. Be sure to let other Legal Nurse consultants know about Legal Nurse Podcast. You can find us at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. You can also download our new mobile app and listen to this podcast on your phone. You can get that app at legalnursebusiness.com/BizEdu, B-I-Z-E-D-U, where you'll receive podcasts, articles, webinars, courses, and other types of learning materials, as well as writing tips for legal nurse consultants. Come back next week. We'll have a new interview, and thank you for spending your time with us today.
Be sure to get your free presentation to attorneys checklist at the show notes for this podcast at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com, or request it when you sign up for our free app at legalnursebusiness.com/BizEdu.
And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on legalnursebusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at legalnursebusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lnceu.com. And my last website, thelncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.